the latest episode of No Franchise Fatigue, the podcast dedicated to celebrating the cinematic franchise. No matter how many sequels, prequels, remakes, reboots, reimaginings, or remakels are included. My name is Matt Reifschneider, and I am joined by my vengeful and very viral co-host, Sean Kaler. How are you doing today, sir?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Nirvana wrinkles.
Nirvana wrinkles. I know. That is something that when we get to it in this final film, I don't know what that actually means. I'm just going to be straight up.
Joke, right?
No clue. No clue what it actually means. But yes, as you notice, I did want to point out one thing before we get the ball rolling on this. You'll notice I am wearing a red hat today. And that is because we had somebody, one of our listeners, a new listener, reach out and say that our Limp Bizkit joke in the episode for Five Deadly Venoms was their favorite joke in the whole series. So this goes out to that listener. I'm wearing a red hat just for you today. So
if only we could fly.
Now,
Limp Bizkit style.
You do know that when we cover Mission Impossible, that's all we're going to talk about for Mission Impossible 2, right? Is the Limp Bizkit song?
That's the only thing in that movie we're talking about.
Don't you dare. John Woo. Don't you talk bad about
John Woo. As a matter of fact,
Woo.
Actually, I like that movie more than most. Because my low point, I'm the oddball. My low point for that is 3.
Okay, we're already going to disagree there. But we're going to leave that for another discussion, for another time. Yes. Because we have a lot to cover today.
Not so much wells this time, but we are ringing in the new year by finishing out the first franchise we started, finally.
Yeah, we are finishing off the Ring franchise, and we're going to call this Ring Part 3 Phase Sadako. That's what we're going to call this, I think, because this is literally the Sadako phase of this franchise, where it abandons the Ring title and focuses on the what is the latest, but probably hardly final, 4 films in this franchise, which happen to be Sadako 3D, Sadako 3D 2, Sadako versus Kayoko, and the final film, Sadako, not to be confused with any of the others. So we'll just refer to that as Sadako 19. So, because it came out in 2019, so that's what we'll refer to it. So that is what we are talking about today, but we are ringing in the new year, because that is good. We've already ran out of well puns to use for titles, and since these films only have a well kind of randomly occasionally, let's just stick with Ring, even though there's literally no rings in these films.
Before we get into it, I think instead of, you know, where our first exposure to this, because obviously we're well past that at this point, I think I'd like to bring up that I found these movies fascinating strictly on the level of it's not really about the videotape anymore, and it's not really about that myth anymore. Sadako's hit a point in the cultural oeuvre, whatever you want to call it.
I do like the hand gesture that went with oeuvre.
Where these 4 movies really could have been wildly disparate productions from wildly different people, and you could have told me they were all just kind of based on the same monster, like your different Bigfoot movies or your different vampire movies, etc. And I'd have totally believed you, because that's kind of what Sadako has become. Sadako has become at this point is she's the myth, you know? I mean, it was always kind of about urban legends, but she's hit a point where she is in and of herself an urban legend.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of the key in the title change for this portion of the franchise, is to indicate that she has outgrown the plots. Her character has now, you can put her kind of in any kind of movie and it'll work. Simply because she has become her own, you know, we talked about in our first episode, which is All's Well That Ends Well, way back at the beginning of this series of podcasts. But we talked a lot about, and you specifically talked a lot about, you know, water demons and things like that. And that's a point that I want to bring up in one of these films specifically later on. But she's almost become her own urban myth outside of a franchise, you know, something like a Frankenstein or a Dracula to a point that, and I think that's really fascinating. And it's one of the reasons I really wanted to talk about this franchise, because it is one that has become bigger than anything that you could kind of talk about. And we're gonna and something I really want to touch on for one of these films is how clever the marketing has gotten with Sadako in terms of how this works. So
By God, one of these started out as an April Fool's joke, and then like a week later, like, oh no, we're actually filming it.
oh yeah, we decided there was enough people that really thought this was fun that we're gonna do it. So yes, this is literally how this franchise has become, has grown to this point. But so yeah, we are talking about the last part of the Ring franchise, the Sadako phase. And before we get too far along and dig too deep into this well, let's take care of some business, Sean. So if you like what you hear today, please check out our expanding back catalog wherever you listen to your podcasts on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or definitely YouTube. Check out our other series, Good, Bad, Weird, Wild, Fatigued But Not Forgotten, For Your List Only, and of course, this series, which happens to be No Franchise Fatigue. So check us out. We're a weekly podcast, so you'll see us up every week for all your weird cinematic analysis needs. And while you're there, please rate, review, subscribe. Why? Because you deserve the good things in life. And also, we may be friends with Sadako by this point. We have now done enough coverage. In fact, I was actually laughing because I've been doing so much research on Sadako this week that I was suggested on YouTube a franchise analysis of the Ring franchise that was only 8 minutes long. And by the time we're done with this, it'll have taken us like 6 or 7 hours to analyze this franchise. And I think it's well deserves it because it is a wild, wild fucking franchise. And on that side note, there's one other thing while doing my research this week I wanted to bring up that while lately I have really been looking at the Rotten Tomato scores and bringing that up on episodes because I'm really fascinated by it, I just want to bring to this attention because I didn't do this in the beginning that the original Ring has a 98% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Now, when you say the original Ring or the Ring?
No, Ring. Hideo
Okay.
Nakata's Ring, 98%. Ring 2 by Hideo Nakata, 0%. Talk about a franchise that falls off. I just want to bring that up. I know this is a random tangent. I just saw that and I was like, I have to mention this on the podcast because that is fucking wild. And we're gonna, because I'm gonna bring up Rotten Tomatoes quite a bit in this for each of these films, and you're gonna be shocked by some of these as we kind of go into it. So.
Yeah, gonna be talking about Mr. Nakata again a little bit later too.
We are. I'm excited. So, I guess, are you ready? Crack your knuckles. Let's start in the bottom of the well. We're going to be talking about Sadako 3D, released in 2012, and I'm going to butcher all of these names, so I apologize ahead of time. I do not speak Japanese, and so this director, in fact, is a hard name for me to pronounce. So, Tsurumu Hanabusa. Something like that, pretty close.
Actually, pretty good. Pretty
Okay,
good.
so Sadako 3D 2012, directed by Tsutomu Hanabusa. Yes, supposedly a direct sequel to Spiral, which we discussed in our first episode when we went through the first four films of the Ring franchise. And in this world that we now live in, which has seemingly gone on without Sadako raising hell across Earth as it was at the end of Spiral, which makes me question its connections to that film, but we'll get into that in a second. We are introduced to an online video done by a gentleman who seemingly is told he commits suicide, and this video is cursed online. Come to find out that this viral video that the young kids in school and stuff are trying to search for has been essentially infected by Sadako, the gentleman who commits suicide. And I'm going to put that in quotes because two reasons for that. Number one, we like to talk about suicide, I guess, on this podcast. And once again, we're bringing that up. And number two, you find out later that it is not suicide. When you watch the video, you're like, this is obviously not suicide whatsoever. And then you actually find out later on he's not even dead. So, which is even better. So, you have this video that is going viral with this. You're introduced to a school teacher whose students are looking up this video and her brother. They live together and they stumble onto this new viral video and have to uncover the secrets behind why it is driving people to suicide who watch it. So they're not dying by fright or anything like that. It is suicide. Come to find out, this gentleman was obsessed with resurrecting Sadako. And he decides to use his video to do so. And you come to find out he has been killing young women in the area, dumping their bodies into the well that he assumes is Sadako's well, which happens to be next to a factory this time, I guess, and not underneath a hotel or anything like that. So it is magically moved. And the young woman, together with a police officer, uncover the secrets of this. They have to face off Sadako in the end and her legion of Sadako wannabes, insect-like Sadako wannabes, before they finally figure out that to beat Sadako, they have to, I don't know, something, something, something. Well, this movie, if you can't tell by my synopsis, is a little bit scattered.
It's a little bit scattered, but one tiny note. Just for the record, Takanori and Akane are boyfriend and girlfriend, not brother and sister.
Oh, are
Because
they?
Takanori's sister is the
Oh,
main
she's the
character of the
protagonist in the
sequel.
sequel. You are correct, sir. I stand corrected. You are correct. This is what I get for doing synopsis off the
It
top
just
of my
makes it
head.
just makes a plot point in the second movie a little more awkward if they're
This
brother
is
and
true. I
sister.
wouldn't push past this franchise, though, to do that.
New. Oh, God, no.
We are talking about J-horror this month, as a matter of fact, so this is par for the course.
Yeah, no kidding.
Easily
But,
mistakable.
so first off, I'm gonna lead off with stealing your thunder and pointing out that this movie is just derided by people, completely ripped apart. And I think, in fairness, because I came out more positive on this movie, certainly than I was expecting to, I will lead with the stuff in it that I thought, fair enough, I can see why someone would be find this movie problematic. The 3D gags are really bad. I
Ugh.
mean, like Friday the 13th 3D eyeball popping out of the screen bad.
Yeah, it's and it's
That
from minute
fall
one.
shot. Yo, that falling shot down the well is, and they reuse it. Oh, they lean on that shot.
It's trashy CGI to begin with, and I get that that's problematic, but man, they are like, this is Sadako in 3D. And they literally throw so much shit at the audience from minute one, glass, screams, hair, you name it. It is literally all coming at you. It is one of the most exploitative versions of 3D I've ever seen.
The internet artist who was driven to suicide by they talked shit about him in the comments, and he decided to kill himself and teach them all. It's there's a lot.
Well, and that's.
And there's some unintentional comedy here too. And I say unintentional because, like, for one, the only other minor correction I'm issuing, they make a special point. He actually throws these women down the well alive because he's trying to provide a new body for Sadako to jump into.
Right.
And so, just like there's the opening shot of the movie is him just flinging this poor woman into the well and then laughing like a maniac, and it's just so unintentionally hilarious.
There is a lot of unintentional humor here, and part of that is just, and maybe we'll get more into like the execution. So to go off of that point is that there is a huge disparity, and this is part of where my comment about the film being scattered arrives between concept and execution here. And I think this is the biggest where, you know, as you said, this film gets notoriously trashed online. There is no critics consensus on Rotten Tomatoes for this. It was not screened for critics, so there's not enough voting for it. It only has a 15% audience score. That's low, right? This film gets notoriously trash, and I think it's because of that disparity between concept and execution. And while I want to talk about the execution or the concepts, maybe we'll talk about that here in a second. Let's talk about that execution because it is that CGI, the 3D element, some of the performances that are really over the top, and the fact the film looks cheap. It almost looks like it's made for TV. It's filmed in a way that's very fake looking. It doesn't have that sense of atmosphere or lighting that you would assume from this franchise, particularly even from the American films of this that you would expect, that kind of high quality. So there's this sense of like lacking execution for the film that really undercuts a lot of the good things that are in it. And, you know, like you said, the throwing a woman down the well, or the girl that falls out the window just looks terrible. And there's just some weird things in it. The sequence where the butterfly hits the window and cracks it, like it hits it as hard as a bird. I'm like, this is a butterfly, man. Like, there's just weird things.
Actually, just the butterfly thing altogether. Where the hell did that come from?
Well, and there's a and we can get into that in a bit, because I actually want to talk about that, the insect stuff. But there's just a lot of this execution that I think is really faulty. And I don't know if I want to say that it's all of director Hanabusa's fault or anything like that. There's just a lot of things that are misfiring here that I feel like are problematic for it. Simply because... No, go ahead.
I think some of it, maybe the era, the early 2010s were pretty weird place for Japanese horror too. You had a lot more, there was like a weird pop star dominance there for a while. You had like Moonchild, a few things like that.
I forgot about Moonchild.
And this sort of feels like that, especially in the insane artist character, by the name of Kashiwada, who is played by Yusuke Yamamoto, who I just looked up why I recognized him. He was in one of the later seasons of Masked Rider.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, he was one of the Masked Riders.
Oh, I had no idea. That is not something I would have put together.
I was coming off the pop star thing, because I was like, is he just like a member of some rock band or something? Because I wouldn't be shocked if he was. He feels like a stunt cast. Is really what I was getting at there.
Yeah.
What, like 3 scenes in the movie, and he's just way over the top. I didn't dislike him, but like that dude brought 12, and I think the director was looking for like 8.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. He came in all guns blazing in this movie, and part of me enjoys that, but part of me realizes that the rest of the movie's not ready for that. So.
But, sorry, I don't want to step on your toes if you had another point to bring up before I get into it, but I'd certainly like to say I like a lot about this movie too, though.
Oh, for sure. And we can get into it now, because I think execution wise, it's very mixed. You do have some decent stuff here and there. You have some really poor, the flashback with the killer in the school where she learns she has screaming power, I guess. That is so poorly executed, like that whole flashback.
Poorly executed, but flipping back to, like you say, it is a good idea. This is a world that exists with psychics.
Yes.
So it makes sense to show another one.
No, and we'll see that through these last ones, is that there's a lot of psychic abilities. This is something that's been in the franchise the entire time, so it's not anything else. And it works for me in concept. And this is where I'm with you on this. I actually like this movie way more than other people like it. And that's because some of the ideas are just so fascinating. Now, it's supposedly loosely based on the novel S by Koji Suzuki, who is the writer of the entire Ring series of the books, the 6 books that are out now. And it's reportedly a sequel to the film Spiral, although that again is... very loose,
debatable.
So there's a lot of interesting ideas here, and even interesting moments. There's a lot of fun to be had with this movie if you're willing to just step back a little bit. A lot of these moments are really good. Sadako in a billboard in the middle of like Main Street, like that's a fun idea. The screen on the truck, like the fact that she has the ability to get all to all these screens because she's now on the internet. And considering how many screens we are in front of every day, that is a tantalizing prospect, and something that I almost wish the film ran with further in concept.
Another thing I really liked about this, and you kind of mentioned it a little flippantly, but legitimately within Japanese culture, there is, I mentioned in the first episode, bringing back up the idea of yokai, or... you know, what we'd call demons or monsters or what have you. But Sadako was always intended as an update of this specific kind of yokai. And I don't know, I'd have to research, and by God, all anyone ever has to say about this movie is how trashy it is. So I wasn't able to find any real solid grounding on this. But I wouldn't be shocked if there was another yokai that was the basis for those monsters, because one of the ways to become a evil spirit is to die in a bad way, or like a
Right.
wildly unfair way. And it may be weird from the American culture to kind of see why those women would have turned into grasshopper. I'm gonna go with grasshopper monsters.
Yeah, who turn
Well,
into locusts when they die.
yeah. But for one, this is a movie that comes from another culture. At some point, you gotta just buckle your seatbelt and go along for the ride. And for two, yeah, a little bit silly, but they were actually really scary and one of the better effects. I'm glad there was a air of practicality. They definitely built puppet for the legs,
Right.
and it was definitely physically there. It's a weird bend, and when they get the light on it wrong, it looks a little silly, but that practicality helped, and they are very creepy, I think.
Yeah. And I wanted to go with this because I do think there's an interesting parallel that starts running through this movie about insects. As I mentioned the butterfly before, there's locusts, these Sadako monsters that come out of the well, which you're led to believe are the bodies of these women that this guy has thrown down there, right? And that they have been like manipulated by Sadako to be these creatures. They do look like grasshoppers. So there's this weird thing about insects. And as you know, and if you guys, if you listeners out there haven't listened to our first two episodes on the Ring franchise, I highly suggest going back because we're going to be referencing them quite a bit. But in the second one, in the American one, I talk a little bit about the running theme through the American ones is how Samara in those films has become this element of nature. And I think that that's something that they pick up here a little bit on this one is that she's almost like this natural thing, right? This is how she distorts this abandoned factory in the end. It becomes this nightmarish place that nature has reclaimed, right? There's all these weeds and grass that are growing in it, and all of her monsters seem to be these insects with that. And then she, she explodes. They explode into locusts and things like that. I just don't know if the film handles it as well as it needs to. But again, the concept is there and it's fascinating to watch because you're watching them like lay the groundwork for this interesting idea for you to think about and chew on. And I do like it for that.
I also kind of, again, as a sequel to Spiral, it's a little questionable, but on its strict own merits, the idea of a madman who's aware of the Sadako legend trying to resurrect Sadako to bring despair upon the world is an inherently good plot. That's a cool idea. The fact that he tries one way, it doesn't work, so he tries another way, and that's what the video is the idea is when you watch this cursed video, which is a living thing, you can't find it. It finds you. But if you watch this video, basically Sadako comes out and goes, "Nope, not you." And you kill yourself, which is pretty, that's a brutal change. And some of these deaths are pretty gnarly.
Yeah, there's a couple
Silly in
good ones.
3D, but gnarly.
Oh, for
Yeah, a
sure.
couple good ones.
This whole movie's
But
silly in 3D. Such a gimmick.
Akane, who the main character, that's her name, basically Sadako decides that Akane is a good enough vessel. And the plot shifts a little bit. It's one of the first times we've ever seen Sadako sort of lay a trap, because she kidnaps the boyfriend's name is Takanori. She kidnaps Takanori and forces Akane to come to her. And she does actually release Takanori, which is her downfall, because then he destroys the cell phone that she drew Akane in. I didn't say this wasn't weird. I just said it was
Okay,
cool.
this is, and actually, this is something I really wanted to talk to you about because I know you really like, or didn't really like this movie, but you like this movie, is that
I did.
the final act, and we're going to get into pretty spoilers territory here, right? The final act is really fascinating because Sadako has evolved at this point. Not, and it's interesting because, and we'll talk about this with the themes as we do with all these movies, that technology is certainly a theme in these films, that Sadako has evolved with the technology, right? And so there's like this almost this evolution of her. And some of the things I like that she's like she's trying to find a body to, for resurrection, which is obviously a plot point in, I don't know, 1,000 of these movies at this point. But, you know, she's trying to do that. And but she does set a trap. Now, I don't love that they kind of take out the monstrous element of Sadako because of it. Like in the finale, she's shown in full. Her face in full, mm-hmm. and she just looks like a beautiful, you know, young woman. Like, there's no, the monstrous element has been kind of erased from her, which, I mean, outside of when she comes out of the TVs and her hair acts like a prehensile tail and grabs people and random shit like that. You really want to say
I
something.
Mention that as, I'm just saying, you notice I didn't mention that as an element I liked. I don't know when the prehensile hair thing happened, but that was always the Grudges thing. Like, back off.
Right, right. It is what it is, right? That's, I guess that's something that evolves in this one, but, yeah, so you have this kind of interesting finale. Again, he breaks the cell phone, which I literally, my note is how did breaking the cell phone kill Sadako? What the living hell? Because like, you're like, wait, why is this cell phone particular? Anyway, whatever. It's the full third act is almost all dream logic, which I'm okay with because all of these films have utilized that to some degree in the third act. This idea of kind of, being manipulated from the real world to Sadako's world or vice versa. It's an illogical narrative in the third act. I mean, the chair with the phone on it with the picture of the guy is like a little overzealous. Again, you're at that level 12 when I think the director's looking for an 8. It just comes off as a 12. That's like one of those moments. And you get some kind of eye rolling moments where Sadako's like, you and I are the same or whatever. And like, okay, a little bit of an eye roll moment. But again, I think in concept, this movie's very cool. And even this finale with all of its weird narrative leaps still kind of works for me? Question mark?
No, yeah, it absolutely works for me. It, you know, as horror fans, and this is always my go-to example, but we have really been privy to some incredibly dumb logic. My usual go-to is Freddy Krueger was once resurrected by a dog pissing fire.
No, of course.
My secondary is Jason was once hunted by his own Van Helsing who had a special knife that he had to be stabbed with by his own family member. And it's like, where the hell did that come from? Where the hell did that go?
Yeah. Well, it went to hell with Jason.
Ah, yes.
Yes, yes. I just want to point that out.
On the final Friday because...
On the final Friday.
Early 90s.
On the final Friday because they didn't have the rights to the 13th. That's a franchise now. Friday the 13th. I did pick up the Scream Factory box set. We will have to cover that someday. And we've already had requests for it, so we will eventually cover that. Okay, so that kind of... I only have one other thought in this about this film that I really wanted to touch on, but what about you? What are your thoughts? Any final thoughts to wrap up Sadako 3D?
No, honestly, again, I'd say give this one a fair shake. It pops on and off of Shudder. It's honestly, at the very least, it's worth 90 minutes of your time. There's some really fun ideas at play here, and it's well shot despite the bad effects.
Yeah. And I would agree. It's an interesting film. I am a firm believer and I tend to be very biased or at least to some degree give the benefit of the doubt to films that take wild swings, even if they don't connect. And I think this is the perfect mm-hmm. example of that. When I reviewed this film, when it first came out on Blu-ray via Wellgo USA, they had sent me a screener for it. I was actually very positive on it and was a little bit shocked to see how negative the reviews were coming out about it. And to this day, even rewatching it, yes, the film is at times batshit insane and it doesn't capitalize on the insanity that it has going for it. I do think there's so much fun to be had with that insanity. And so I do have to agree. Now, the last thing I want to say is, what do you think about the mid-credit stinger that happens in this film?
Where all of a sudden we realize that the insane artist's landlord has something to do with it.
Right. It's literally, and quite frankly, this is obviously the films, the Sadako 3D and Sadako 3D 2 were essentially filmed back to back, right? They were filmed very quickly mm-hmm. in succession. It's very much a cliffhanger scene. But I remember even now watching it going, I don't like that. It's like one of those.
Well, and there's a post-credits button too, where it's the insane artist sitting on the chair going, okay, I guess we're starting again.
Yes. Oh, for sure. And which will be revealed to some degree, these both of these elements in the sequel, Sadako 3D2. So
To some very small degree.
please, Sean, yes, tell us what is Sadako 3D2 about?
In one of the very, very few direct sequels in this franchise, we actually pick up very rapidly after Sadako 3D, where Takanori and Akane are having a daughter, which is the element I was referring to.
For
That's
sure.
why it's good they're not brother and sister. And the artist's landlord just says, like, the girl is born, and then all of a sudden, another woman accessing a laptop gets killed by Sadako, so we learn, at least that the cursed video is still a factor. And then it just jumps to 5 years later. Akane is dead, died in childbirth, and we are following now Fuko, which is Takanori's little sister, and she is taking care of Nagi, who is the daughter. And basically, Nagi looks nominally like Sadako, definitely has the dark bangs and long dark hair down. And she keeps drawing weird drawings and being around people where, like, she grabs one guy's coattails and then he jumps off a bridge. Like, so she's definitely a harbinger of suicide herself. And basically, everyone around this girl starts to think that she is. They're not really accusing her of being Sadako, because Sadako's not quite the cultural figure in this. She's more rumor, but they definitely think the girl's weird. She's trouble. She's cursed. Whatever. She's getting bullied. The girl that bullies her ends up dying mysteriously. All kinds of stuff. So they bring her into this therapist. She does some really creepy psychological torturing of the therapist, and then this movie kind of jumps point to point. But she basically, the therapist tells everyone that everything is a-okay before killing herself. And what you slowly start to realize is that actually Akane is alive and has been in a coma 5 years, but they're afraid if Nagi and Akane get within any kind of distance of each other, it'll be enough to resurrect Sadako in Nagi's body. So apparently she's just got a partial connection, and Akane has the other part, and that's why they have to keep them separated and tell everyone Akane's dead. This whole time we got a new cop who is trying to figure all this out, and eventually it hits a point where Fuko decides that, she has to kill Nagi to stop all the weirdness. Nagi's crying at her, saying, "No, I don't want to die." And she goes, "No, I'm not going to kill you." You realize this is actually a sweet, kind of innocent little girl, and she brings her to see her mother, which has the expected effect of resurrecting Sadako, sort of. This movie's a little fiddly with all that, but what we end up discovering is the guy, or the woman who committed suicide at the beginning, simultaneously with the birth, was this cop's wife, and he had been looking for Akane the whole time because he wants to take his revenge on her. So Akane wakes up, almost gets to touch her daughter, gets shot through the chest, and boom, Sadako comes back full force and wreaks havoc for a minute, and then everybody's defeated and question marks, like.
Question. You ended it like I ended the other one, and I think your phrase "a little fiddly" is a proper explanation for both of these films. They're a little fiddly when it comes to like strong narrative choices.
Well, 'cause basically, yeah, when Akane gets shot, like the ever disappearing, reappearing well shows up in the middle of this room and just starts spewing blood. And Sadako tries to take Nagi with her. Fuko saves Nagi. They're having a picnic, and then the artist, it's shown a couple weeks later, they're having a picnic, and then the artist gets executed via hanging, what, for throwing a bunch of innocent women down a well in the previous movie.
You know, I'm looking out my window right now, and it's weird. I'm actually seeing a well outside that wasn't there before.
I'm the asshole here, you're right. Wells show up just out of nowhere
Yeah,
all the time.
you should just know that wells like just randomly appear, you know, and they're stone wells, and they look like if you fell down, you probably couldn't climb up it with your fingernails. It'd probably rip out your fingernails. So I don't know. I don't know. Do you see a well? Do you see a well? I don't know. I see a well. So.
I don't know. I think this is the last time we're going to see a well for a while.
Oh, well. yes, a little fiddly. That's what we're going to talk about here. So, and we will get to this ending because this ending is fucking wild. So,
I think, first off, I will say that most of my problems with this movie, because again, I actually like this more than certainly the RT score, which I won't hamstring you there, but the problems with this one, unfortunately, are the opposite. I think a lot of this movie is actually executed better than its ideas, because the ideas are just scattershot. It's like someone did one of those corporate meetings with the no bad idea cloud and little post-it notes and everything, and every one of them got into the movie without someone doing a pass and connecting them.
I agree, and you're absolutely the right. The Rotten Tomatoes score is atrocious. Again, like the first one, this one does not have a critic score. There wasn't enough critics to rate it, although I do have a review up, so if you guys wanted to go to bloodbrothersfilms.com, go check out my review for Sadako 3D 2, if you feel free. But the audience score, 7% on this one, and I am also a fan of this one, and I also like this one more than Sadako 3D 1, and here's my reasoning. Number one, I fully agree with you. Here, the concepts are too muddled, and my one major issue for this film is that for a movie called Sadako, there is very, very little about Sadako.
Practically none. Yeah.
She doesn't really show up until the final act. Nobody really talks about her till the final act. So that's kind of a big thing for me. It doesn't feel like a Ring film. It's almost a combination of like the movie Orphan and then the movie Final Destination. It's almost like this weird combination of the two of those, which I kind of like in execution. Like, it's an evil kid that drives people to suicide. It's kind of a fun idea.
No, I definitely got kind of an Omen-y Damien kind of vibe.
Exactly. Okay, yeah. Maybe not Orphan. Orphan's a bad... Yes, absolutely. Omen. Almost like this, you know, child of Sadako instead of child of the devil, right? So there's...
What's the functional difference at that point?
Oh, yeah. At this point, yeah. Fair point. And I actually think this one came out the year after, so 2013. It's also directed by Hanabusa. I actually think he's a better director here. There's a lot more better visuals going on. Even the scene where, like, the brother from the first one, like the scene where he comes out of work, his work, mm-hmm. because he works in that area or whatever, the way that it's shot through all these trees, these craggly trees, it makes it look like like the screen is almost like shattered, like broken. And you're like, oh, that's a good shot. Like this director's already come a long way just in a year.
Oh, even I couldn't, you put a gun to my head, I couldn't explain to you why the well appears in the middle of Akane's room in this movie, but by God, it's a good looking shot.
Oh, it's great in the room filling up with blood, and even Akane, it's revealed at the end of the first film, we didn't touch on this, that when she comes back from fighting Sadako in Sadako's world, which, why don't we have we should just start a podcast called Sadako's World, a fan fiction. But when she comes back from Sadako's world, she has all of this hair. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an interesting scene, like when he's trying to dig through
the hair. That's a cool visual, too, in the first time you see her laying in the bed. And
then in the second one, you see she still has that long hair, and it's almost this Snow White kind of, you know, a woman in a glass case, like a glass coffin kind of deal. That's very cool. And I like that it's almost like a lighthouse, that it's almost a well that you have to go down to get to her. Like there's all these stairs and stuff like that. I think that's really cool. So there's a lot of visual stuff that I actually really like in this movie, but you're absolutely right. This movie is muddled when it comes to its narrative choices. It starts off with the lady from the end of the first one in a greenhouse, and the title sequence has all of these plants growing. And I was like super excited because of my feelings about Sadako as a force of nature and things like that. When I first watched this, I'm like, oh, so Sadako 3D ran with this theme about bugs. This one will run with this theme about plants, right? Like, I was like, that's kind of a cool idea. And that is completely dropped within like 5 minutes of this film starting, and it's never brought up again. So that is, and so it almost makes like the introduction of the plants and the title sequence and the plants at the end credits feel unnecessary. You're like, why are these here? Why is this supposedly puppet master lady that's revealed in the first one, which only shows up twice in this to like talk random poetic shit. You know, why is she in a greenhouse? Why is this a thing? And so that gets really muddled there too.
But, you know, I'd say the 3D is not as in your face. There's distinctly less CG.
To its benefit.
You know, much to its benefit. It's it feels much more grounded. You don't see Sadako's face, but I do seem to recall a very distinct shot of her hand with no fingernails. I thought that was a neat callback detail.
And there's a lot of those, because there's even a scene where she, when she's touched by Sadako, I'm going to put that in quotes, she has the spiral bruising on her arm, which is like a nice throwback. And I was like, okay, they're bringing that back too. And like, there's a lot of things I like in this one too.
Yeah, they made it something of a cursed mark. Everybody who's touched by Sadako has that.
Yes.
Going up their arm, yeah.
And so I think that was kind of cool. I do think this cop subplot is really plot progression more than anything else. They even bring back the cop from the first one who got bit on the neck. So how he survived is kind of beyond me. But he survives for one scene that's kind of a throwaway scene.
It is a throwaway scene, but I also thought this movie was scarier. A little more in the jump scare sense, admittedly. But some of them actually got me pretty good. And that specifically, yes, it was a throwaway scene. Yeah, it was kind of dumb. I can't imagine how the cop survived that first movie. But that little girl coming up behind him and pushing him down the stairs did actually make me go, what?
Oh, no. I think that's part of it. The first one felt much more cartoonish in its execution with the CGI and the 3D gimmicks. This one feels much more like we're going to do a killer kid version of Sadako, and this is what we're going to lean on. It's going to be much more atmospheric and darker, and I much prefer that overall. So there's a lot of that. There's some great stunts when I can't remember if she's a housekeeper or a nanny or something like that, but when she goes out the window and she hits the car, that stunt, I was like, oh my, because she's like walking by and you see the lady hit the car right next to her in shot. And I was like, okay, that shot was just so good. So there's a lot that's going on there. So there's only one last thing I want to talk about the ending to kind of, because this one I feel overall is an interesting idea. It's the least Ring-like film of this franchise, I would argue, which can be problematic for people. So I almost get the 7%. Audience score in general for this film because of that. But I do think, again, this is a film that should be kind of seen just to be, you know, this film doesn't even have a real proper US release. So it's really hard for me to be like,
I was about to say, it's very hard to see.
I do have a Blu-ray that I ordered from Hong Kong. So it's a region A, so it'll play in all players and things like that. I got it for fairly cheap. It was like $15. So I do suggest, you know, if you want to, ordering that Blu-ray to support the franchise. But yeah, this one is kind of hard to find if you live in the US, but I do suggest seeing it. So I do have one last point, but I want you to kind of cap off your thoughts.
I was about to say, before we get into the giant literal cartoon that is the next movie. Oh, okay, figuratively literal cartoon. The marketing on these two movies was so... I just really want to talk about the Sadako car.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, feel free. Talk about the marketing.
Because Sadako 3D, and I believe 3D 2 also, but they had this car driving around, and I want to say it stopped in the United States also, that is literally just a little car with like a TV screen and a paper mache Sadako crawling out of it, which is not a shot that's in the movie, either of the movies, but it's just much like the Rickmobile or the Pikachu V-Dub Bug. There is just something about a great marketing car.
I'm a sucker for it. I'm a big fan of the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, so I am also about a Sadako mobile. No, it's incredible. They also had it, I think, in the New Year's parade for the year that Sadako 3D came out. I think that's what they originally it was done for.
That's pretty funny.
So I thought that was pretty fun for it. So yes, all right, Sadako vehicle, and we will get into more marketing here in a second. In fact, I will spin off into my introduction of the next film by doing that. But any last thoughts before I have one final thought on Sadako 3D Part 2?
No. It's a movie I enjoyed, but it really is a... we said it all. It's very confused and confusing.
It is. And that actually brings me to my final point, which is, how do you feel about the twist of a different Sadako child in the last 3 seconds of this movie?
That was a choice.
It was a bold choice. It makes me laugh every time it happens because they're like, by the way, Nagi wasn't the girl causing these suicides. It just happened to be another girl close to her on her cell phone. Kills me.
No, to me, that definitely reeked of we really want a sequel that's not going to happen.
Yes, I fully agree. I thought it was funny that it's revealed, you know, and I think the idea was is that you've grown to care about Nagi a lot through the film if you're invested in it. You've grown to, you know, enjoy her as a character, and they wanted to be like, well, she's not evil at all. You know, like, it was kind of like, oh, like, she's still innocent.
Though I will say, I was actually shocked by how much I cared when they go to throw Nagi off the bridge, and she just looks up with tears in her eyes, is like, you want to end me? I may not have watched the world's best translation.
Yeah, mine says, do you want to kill me? So, yeah. End me is funnier, though, I'll give you that.
But and I was surprised by like how taken aback I was by that, because you know it is kind of that Omen thing where it's like how much of it is his fault.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Omen may be not the best example because Damien is literally a little shit. Yeah. But regardless, you know, it's still the innocence thing. At some point, you have to step back and be like, well, you know, she was literally born evil. Like,
yeah.
I mean.
Well, right. And then the reveal that, you know, Nagi wasn't even born evil. It was never connected mm-hmm. to her. It was this other girl that it was. But I agree. In fact, my last note that I have is obvious bait for Sadako 3D3. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you that also. Would you have been game for a Sadako 3D3 had these films not been completely and utterly crucified by critics and fans?
What's funny is, if you had asked me before we watched another movie in this, I would have said yes. But I think we took this series in an interesting direction later.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, I would have been, I'm always as a franchise whore, and the reason we started this podcast, I have to admit that I would have totally been game for Sadako 3D3, partially because I like these films much more. Than other people, so
I still wouldn't fully write it off. Sadako 3D spun off of the Spiral movies, which in and of itself was an abandoned sequel to the original, so right.
I know at this point we should post a flow chart for this franchise on our Twitter so people can actually like see what the fuck, how this actually works, because if you know Sadako 3D is actually truly a sequel to Spiral, which in itself is a sequel to Ring, which is itself, you know, a spawn of this and a spin-off of that. It just makes it so funny. And that if we did that kind of a flowchart, we would have to put a whole separate second page dedicated to how this next film doesn't fit into either franchise that it's spinning off.
Oh, it makes no goddamn sense.
And that means we are talking next about Sadako versus Kyoko, which is a 2016 film directed by Koji Shiriyoshi. I'm just going to jump into the... I'm going to save my thoughts on this film because we're going to jump into this.
I'm usually not that guy, since you're going to have to say it a lot. It's Kyoko.
Kyoko. Shit. Kyoko. You are correct. Sadako versus Kyoko. Kyoko. Fuck me. Sadako versus Kyoko, 2016, directed by Koji Shiriyoshi. You should keep all of that in. I don't want you to edit any of that. And you're going to listen to me struggle with this for the rest of my existence.
Yep, now I've made you self-conscious about it, too.
I'm going to double think it. Here's how we're going to fix this. S versus K.
SVK, that's what I've been calling it.
We're going to call this SVK. Okay, SVK, 2016, director Koji Shiriyoshi. Rotten Tomatoes score, critics 48%, audiences 28%. Again, a film that was generally panned by everybody. So, this film follows two different plots. The first one is a couple of school or college girls who are in college taking a class on urban legends. The professor talks about all the different legends of Japan, really focuses in on the cursed tape and how his obsession with it has come to be. In trying to find a VCR to be able to play this video that they have, stumble upon the cursed tape in a flea market, in a VCR, They watch it. One of them watches it. The other one does not watch it because she's playing on her cell phone, answering a text message, which is so 2016. But so one of them watches it. They take it to the professor, knowing that they have been cursed. You see somebody else who had watched the tape before perish pretty dramatically in a pawn shop. So that's kind of fun. They go to the professor to find out. The professor watches the tape, realizes it's true, calls up his exorcist friend, who in turn calls her exorcist friend. Him and his associate stop by. They realize that the only way to beat a curse is to fight it with a curse. And that is where Miss K joins the foray in this film. In the meantime, you do have a second plot that has a new family that moves across the street from the cursed house. So we now have a cursed tape in a cursed house. So the cursed house, you see it's four little boys that go missing when they go into the house. You're treated to a lot of fun grudge, material in this part. For that, you have this young woman who's in high school, is being drawn to the house. They then join forces in the third act for these two plots to create the titular Battle of the Ages of SVK. And you are related where they decide to try to pit the two curses against each other, which results in them using an abandoned well nearby. So it's not technically Sadako's well, but it is an abandoned well nearby to try to trap both of the demons in the well. And the results are a lot of exploding hair. There's a lot of exploding hair in this movie. So much exploding hair. And we are left with the ultimate evil, a combination of S and K together as a monstrous giant evil hairball. The end. Roll credits. And the greatest end credit song of all time, which is a song written for this movie about demons. And it's like a punk song, and it's so much fun. All right. That is SVK.
So, if you treat this as a cartoon off of cartoon logic, I actually thought this movie was a hell of a lot of fun. I honestly don't have much in the way of complaints for it. You've got, you know, I mean, if I was trying to take this movie seriously at all, I would start off with all of the characters are cartoon characters. It's not, but within the context of what's going on, it's really kind of clever. It's not just that the main girl is so focused on her phone or anything. It's already established she's terrible at paying attention to things. Like, yeah, she sleeps through the entire mythology class. she's got no idea what's going on. I think some of the deaths in this movie are really, really good. I think some of the effects are kind of silly. Kayako looks terrible. What's the little boy?
Toshio.
Toshio doesn't look a hell of a lot better, although there is an hysterical scene where the blind assistant to the second exorcist, the more powerful exorcist, they step right at the threshold of the house. They don't actually go in, and she points, she goes, "Kayako, Toshio," and she points over, and the dude wings this rock at Toshio, and it just makes the cat running away.
Yeah, and the door slams.
Skittering off. It is so funny.
It is so good.
Oh my god.
He blesses the rock because he has this like almost like old school kung fu way of like blessing, like as like a priest or something like that.
He like writes it in the air. Yeah.
Yeah, he writes the you know talismans in the air or whatever. He blesses the rock, throws it, hits the door. That is like the greatest scene in this movie is him throwing a rock at Toshio and Toshio making the cat noise. I
laughed until I cried. Yeah, no, for real. And just, I mean, Sadako, basically, they bring it down to just the walk and her, hands. You don't really see much of her face.
Which I like.
You know, you're warned not to look into Sadako's eye.
Right, because that's how she scares you to death in the original series.
Which I actually thought was a neat callback. But that only actually physically happens once, way at the tippy end.
And my favorite is she does it to I'm going to butcher her name, Kayako?
Kayako, you got it.
Kayako. Okay, cool. We are on a roll, motherfucker. So I love that she does it to Kayako in the third act where she shows her her eye and Kayako like explodes in the air. I was just like, this is so good.
It's good. But other like super cartoony aspects of this movie that again, just if you're into it, you're super into it. You got this professor who wants to see Sadako so badly. And during this attempted exorcism scene, they basically get the curse of the two girls, the one who saw the tape, the one who's cursed. They put her in this state where they half draw Sadako out of her. And basically you get the two assistants, one kills the other one and then breaks their own neck in just the most spectacular fashion.
Like a horrific, grotesque Looney Tunes fashion.
Just bends it backwards and pulls it like a giraffe. It's insane. But then the exorcist herself gets kind of possessed, and the teacher goes up to her and is like, get out of her, get out of her. And the exorcist headbutts him three times, and the third time hits him so hard, his face flattens like a pizza. I mean, we are at Riccio level effects here, and it is amazing.
Okay, I'm so glad you enjoyed this movie, because I adore this movie. I think this movie is a fucking blast from beginning to end. I think this movie's good.
Well, even if you cut out the cartoonishness a little bit and the fact that it is pretty much a soft reboot of both franchises, now you've only got 2 days, the tape is of an abandoned house instead of a well. Like, there's a lot going on here where this is definitely its own corner universe, completely its own thing whatsoever. But take all that out, take all the cartooniness out, take everything aside, and give me the fact that it is basically someone who is cursed with the ring curse and Sadako is going to kill them. And an exorcist comes up with the plot of pitting that curse against another incredibly powerful curse and searching for the most haunted house in Japan. There is a compelling idea there. Beyond all the silliness, it's a good plot. This is an actively good plot.
Yeah, and I actually agree, and we'll get into this more in a second, but what there's two reasons I think this movie works. Number one is it works because it is both a good ring movie for its ring plot and a good grudge movie for its grudge plot.
Oh, when those little boys chase that other little boy into the thing and Toshio and Kayako just oh, it's brutal. It's actually really violent.
It's super violent for a movie that's obviously fully tongue-in-cheek. So that's the first thing. Second thing I want to do is that, as you mentioned, there's a lot of throwbacks in this movie to both franchises. I am a huge fan of both of these franchises, and I know I have already pitched a Grudge franchise to you, Franchise Fatigue. We will wait to do that because we've done Ring or whatever, but and it's one of the reasons I wanted to do this film, and this one is it's much more...
Oh, gee, how did I spend a year trying to duck the biggest Japanese haunted house franchise ever?
Yep. Yeah. Weird. Considering there's also 12 films in that franchise. I know. I mean, we wouldn't cover all of those because a lot of them are made for TV. So we don't technically cover a lot of the made for TV ones. But it's good on both of those. So the second thing is there's a lot of throwbacks to both franchises. I love that. So for a fan like me, I'm noticing all of them. But it's also a movie that works in a way that doesn't need to be in continuity with either. They've created this separate continuity. As you said, it exists on its own. It's on a separate page from the flowchart, right? But everything in this movie is either a throwback moment to something before or not. All the way down to, like, it's referencing moments from literally Sadako 3D and Sadako 3D2. There's reference points to those movies that aren't necessarily, but they're like fun little, you know, Easter eggs to find or whatever. So it weirdly works as a good film in both franchises. And I think that is a weird wire. And director Koji Ishiriashi is an incredible director in his own right. He's not a newcomer to this genre at all. He also directed Carved, the Slip Mouth Woman, which was that J-horror, whatever. That's also kind of weirdly tongue-in-cheek. He did that one, which is referenced in the opening in the urban legend section. That's one of the urban legends he references, is the slit mouth woman.
Oh yeah, the slit mouth woman.
Yeah, and I think the director definitely threw that in there for a reason. But I think there's a lot of fun to be had in this movie, just in like spotting the Easter eggs, because that's where I have the most fun, is being like, oh, that's a reference to this, that's a reference to that, right? At one point, one of the characters goes, "If it did exist, it would be all over the internet by now for the cursed video," right?
Other thing I liked is, just as someone that grew up loving anime and the particular breed of Japanese cartoon silliness, stuff like, you know, the hair is coming after the psychic and the blind. Sorry, the psychic, and this franchise was so few. The second Exorcist, the dude. But Kaizo? The hair's coming Kaizo? After him and his assistant. Kaizo. It's Kaizo. Kaizo.
Yeah.
But is coming after Kaizo and his assistant. And he does this like talisman thing in the air and then just slashes down at the ground like he has an invisible sword at the end of his hand, and it literally splits the hair.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that is so rad. As a fan of some of these anime and cultural touch points, he actually touched on a fair few like legit Japanese myths, Toilet Hanako and the Red Mantle and a few other things. Anybody that would like to learn a lot more of those in a very silly slapstick way, I highly suggest Haunted Junction.
Oh,
it's about a school possessed by all of these spirits.
Okay.
It's an old anime. It's a cartoon, but
I'll have to check that out because I don't know that. Because like, and you're absolutely right, Kaizo is, he's the one element that's truly unique to this film versus the other ones, and he's such a welcome...
someone that can actually stand up to either of these women.
Right,
yeah.
And has a full understanding of both, and things like that. I love that about him. I love that his assistant's a little girl who's blind. Like, I love, there's so much to love about his character. The whole time, every time I watch this, I'm like, I could use a spinoff of just him. Like, going through and, like, hunting down various, like, legends and urban myths and stuff. Like, I would be incredibly game for that.
I would be here for it, yeah.
Because he is incredible. He's charismatic in the movie. He's an asshole in the movie, which makes him even weirdly more enticing as a character. You know, he's not scared of Toshio at all. He throws a rock at him. So good.
It's still just the best scene. Oh, my God.
I love the scene when they're in the house in the third act, and he's like, he calls him on the phone. He's like, it's failed. You need to get the fuck over here right now. like he knows from a distance that everything has fucked up. And you're like, okay,
which
like, it's good.
Does lend so much more credence to the ending too, because you know, as silly and funny and we're laughing and having a good time, but this movie has a literally apocalyptic ending. They fail, and they fail badly, because not only does the plan not work to have them fight against each other, but it backfires and they combine.
Yes.
We never really get the full breadth of what that means, but you're definitely led to believe it ain't a good.
I love it. I think it's so much fun. I love that. The movie doesn't, and what's funny is, even though the movie is obviously tongue-in-cheek, the characters, they play it seriously enough. And there's serious moments in this film. I don't want to make it like seem like this is a comedy. Because while humorous...
There are four literal elementary school children that get slaughtered in this movie.
And even like the main girl, the girl who watches the videotape first, goes to commit suicide.
Really,
that's it, like, she goes to commit suicide because she can't take the idea that Sadako would come for her. And then Sadako comes for her before the time is up, because Sadako will not be stopped by anyone. Not even the person that's going to die. And I was like, that's dark.
Well, and I mean, at some point she hears that making other people see the tape is something that can work. And then she uploads the video online.
Yeah, because she wants everybody to
die. And loses control of it, like, immediately. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's some dark stuff in here. And the horror elements, as you mentioned, are actually really good. Right? Like, anything that's in the Grudge House is terrifying. The scene where the girl goes in and then her parents follow her. There's the scene where obviously the father gets his head torn off by Toshio, which is a horrifying
that's
scene.
A really good effect.
It's a good effect. But the mom, Kay comes out and grabs the mom and drags her into the darkness. But it's the speed that it happens and everything is legitimately terrifying. And I think that was like, it's the moments where it needs to be horrific, it's terrifying. The moments where it needs to be funny, it's hilarious.
Yeah, because you touched on it earlier, but the pawn owners who sold the VHS to the girls, Their daughter saw the tape, and her suicide scene's really intense. She like climbs up on the like a top shelf and just swan dives onto the concrete.
Oh yeah, it's intense. And the fact that it's played up, like, even though she's like an employee of this mom-pa store or whatever, it's almost played up like a family moment where they're laughing about it. And the girl's like, "Oh, I totally watched that tape to make sure the deck would work." You know? And you're like, and as an audience, because we know what that is, and they all laugh about it, and you're like, "Oh God." And then she kind of makes a comment. She's like, "You know what? That was 2 days
I bet
ago,
I'm gonna
though."
die.
And then she does horrifically, and you're like, "Oh God." And I think it's that balance between like the horror and humor that really, really work for this, to the point where like even moments that are weird. Another great Toshio moment in this movie is when Sadako pulls him into the TV with her hair. Like
Yeah.
he comes out and she grabs him and pulls him in, and just seeing this, like, this little boy just being drugged, like flown off screen into a TV is a funny moment, but you're like, oh shit, like this is like serious stuff, right? So
Oh, I've only ever seen the American Grudge movies, by the way. What is that moving around in Toshio's mouth?
well,
It's like every time he opened his mouth, there was like shit happening.
yes, it's that's something that's actually there's so in the Juon series, you have the first two movies, which are very much their own thing, and then three and four was a reboot series where Toshio is actually the lead villain. It's not K. It's Toshio is the lead villain in that one, and you get this idea that there's something inside of him, like this evil something or whatever that's kind
Okay.
of brought up. So again, this movie
Interesting.
references like all eras of these franchises, so it's kind of fun. So there's that.
It was pretty cool.
Yep. Exploding hair. I do love the fact that in, and I get why some people might be disappointed. I've read reviews of this where they're like, why does it take so long for S to meet up with K in the final act? And I get that. This movie's 2 hours long. It does literally take
It's
an
got
hour and a
the
half to get there, right?
Yeah.
But
The Freddy versus Jason problem, yeah.
right, to get them to the same spot, and people complain about that. I like what's going on in the meantime, so I'm okay with it.
Again, as a matter of fact, I would be bitchier about it, except this is a case where, like I said earlier, like unequivocally, this is a good plot.
Yeah.
This is a smart idea. Pitting two violent ghosts, basically getting someone cursed by these two violent ghosts and making them fight it out over it. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really cool idea. And, given that, I actually sort of like that this really plays out like it's a Ring movie. With the Ju-on scenes thrown in, it feels like more to just set that ending up. Because really, it's kind of nominal to the plot
Right.
otherwise.
Yeah, and even the main character for the Juon plot, which she ends up becoming the lead character in the final minutes of the movie, right? But she's almost a side story versus like a main plot or anything like that.
She's like the new girl in school, and
Yeah.
yeah, you meet her and her friends, and she looks exactly like the cursed friend. They have the same hairstyle and everything, so it gets really confusing too.
Yeah, it can be for sure. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff, but once they do come together, once they are in that house and they're watching the tape, I think there's just so many iconic, they use a lot of the iconic visuals in conjunction with each other. So at the same time that S is coming out of the TV in the classic Ring moment, right, where her super long arms
Kayako's
touch
coming down the
as she's
stairs.
coming down the
Yeah.
stairs at the exact same time, and they're cutting between the two, and then there's a shot where there's like almost like a diopter shot of her coming down the stairs in the foreground and S coming out of the TV in the background, and you're like, this is what I came here for. So I get it why people would be disappointed. Or the scene where K grabs the videotape and crushes it with her
Yeah,
hand,
that was pretty metal.
and you're like, okay, this is a fun concept here for that. So
I also like when they set the girl on the well in between them and they're air quote running at each other because it looks so weird because you can tell they sped up the film because you can't shuffle slash contortion walk that fast.
right.
But it did give it that unnatural air anyway, so it still accidentally worked to the movie's favor.
Which is a tactic that Hideo Nakata used in the first Ring movie and Ring and Ring 2 to give her an otherworldly feel, where they were playing like it backwards to give her like, that weird jaunty walk and stuff like that. And you're like, It's so, I don't know. It works for me. Everything in this movie works for me. I love this movie.
Yeah, I honestly cannot believe how much I like this movie, because I only watched it yesterday. I mean, I still have the text where I was texting my friends being like, oh, this is stupid. What are they going to combine?
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah.
But and it wasn't as stupid as I thought.
So the last thing I want to do to talk about this movie, though, is I do want to go into some of the wild fucking marketing for this movie, because it's obvious that the filmmakers knew just how silly this was, right? As you mentioned before, you briefly kind of touched on this point. This started as an April's Fool gag, right? That it became a fan film online. I don't know if you've ever seen the fan film that somebody made online. It's actually very fun and good. And that had garnered so much attention, they decided to actually do this movie, right? So now, in terms of like some of the fun, you talked about the Sadako car, you name it. I don't know if you've seen the footage of the baseball match.
I love that. That is so funny.
Okay. How incredible is that, that they had both of these characters show up at a baseball game went to throw the opening pitch?
Which, by the way, Sadako got an arm on her.
Yeah, turns out, yeah, that's actually a huge thing. I love that. I mean, there was a ton of videos, and even in theaters, they released a ton of... I've only seen a couple. I've read more about other ones where both SNK are doing PSAs about, like, not using your cell phones, or that this movie is rated R, so you shouldn't bring kids to it, and things like that. There's, like, using them to do that. There was also a...
Remember, Kayako says...
Okay, they did a press conference with all of the actors in as character, and when they would ask questions, that's like how she answers the questions. It's just so good. It's just, there's, and then also they did, there was a marketing gimmick, because, you know, merchandising is always big with these films in Japan. They did a crossover merchandising with Hello Kitty, and if you haven't seen those, definitely Google search the Hello Kitty. It is incredible for that. I want to say it might have just been Sadako that was with the Hello Kitty. I think those are the only ones I've seen, so that's also very good. But it is incredible. I love that they just ran with the marketing on this, and they were like, this will be fun. Like, let's make this fun. We know this movie's stupid. Let's make it fun. And the fact that they accomplished that is just, I'm all about that. So also, I don't know if you noticed, but like, I think there was a Twitter and Instagram account for Toshio and Kayako. They both had, they had an Instagram account together, and they would do like fun promotional videos and stuff like that. I actually think they came up with that earlier. That was part of like the Juon 3 and 4 marketing campaign, but that was something they utilized for this too. If you get a chance, anybody out there, listeners wise, if you want to have a fun afternoon, just start looking up this marketing shit for this movie. It's incredible. It's incredible stuff. I adore it. So, and that's kind of all I have to say about SVK.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add to that, but who would have thought that would have been the longest chunk of this episode? But at the same time, it sort of has to be. Like,
we're covering two franchises. Yeah.
Yeah. And as simple as the movie is, it's also, like you say, it just had so much going for it. This was a smart movie. This is how you cross over franchises, right?
Right.
Really, truly is.
Yeah.
Like, all the jokes aside, they took the essence of both franchises and they put them together in a way that made internally logical sense.
And also, like, it was for the fans. And I think that's maybe why I like this movie so much, is it felt like, as a fan of both franchises, it was made
pure
for me.
Fan service.
Yeah. And I mean, it made logic as a film that stands on its own, but the fan service in it is just so good that I can't not look at it. So I'm all about it.
All right. But I suppose that brings us to fan service of a different kind, because what do we do? We bring back the original director.
You could say we're going back to the well for this one.
You could, but there's no well.
There's no well in this one, though. There's a cave.
There is a cave with a circular opening.
Yes, I actually have a note about that looking like a well. So,
however, so yes, based on a story by Koji Suzuki, again, as most of these are, this one called Tide, and directed again by Hideo Nakata, who comes back to the franchise after getting lambasted in Ring 2, as you said. What we have here is what starts out as a mother is trying to immolate her daughter in a closet, and the little girl is rescued by Sadako. So we start off just with a, this is a interesting direction. The main through line is basically we have Mayu and her brother Kazuma. And they each kind of have a plot line. So Mayu's plot line is that she is the doctor of the mysterious girl who is unnamed, is seemingly abusively unnamed by her mother, although told her entire life that she was Sadako resurrected. And she's trying to take care of the girl and figure out the mystery of what's going on there. Well, at the same time, her brother is basically this, like, B-tier kind of internet star, like a YouTuber, who has falling views and is trying to recapture the glory of this one time he did it from inside a haunted house, which was, coincidentally, the burned apartment building that this girl's from. And so, basically, within his plot line, he gets cursed for going there and is trying to find this cave shrine, what have you, and is disappeared, gone for most of the movie. And thus it becomes Mayu's A and B plot to figure out this girl and save her brother. So, sorry, this one's a little convoluted, and I don't have a lot of assistance on this because there is no internet information on this movie at all.
This movie almost doesn't exist. Side note.
Yeah.
For a movie that came out last year.
Right? Like, it's weirdly underrepresented online. But basically, the thrust of it is that this is something of a soft reboot for Sadako, and they make her kind of, lack of a better term, kind of a patron saint of abused children. Seeds of despair, so to speak. I believe is the term they use, although that might be a different movie. Shit, was that Sadako 3D2 with the Seeds of Despair?
Nobody knows. That's
for this movie. Nobody knows anything about these movies. Sadako's mother, who is once again a powerful debunked psychic, did leave Sadako in this shrine where she apparently grew up and then became this vengeance spirit. It's not as explicit. As a matter of fact, this movie is a deep return to subtlety, which is something I very much liked about it, personally. But again, in a synopsis sense, basically, after the cops stop him from going into the shrine, Mayu and her brother's friend, who ends up joining her in this journey, the cops search the area and basically say, we don't see, you know, your brother, we don't see Kazuma anywhere. He's not here. Well, realizing it's a full moon and the tide's going to come in and he's going to die in the shrine if they don't find him, she sneaks in under the cover of darkness after the cops are all gone. And when she gets in there, she does find her brother in a complete panic and a complete freak out. And then she looks to the water and sees the mysterious girl, which is what she's credited as. So it's the best I got.
Right. Yeah.
But she sees a mysterious girl, and all of a sudden, all these children's skulls from all the unwanted children in the shrine, all these children start reaching and grabbing for her, and you start getting the impression that Sadako's taking over the skull's soul. And her physical body is crashing. There's another doctor there who is trying to save her, but she's got, you know, no pulse, and everything's dropping. So Mayu runs in there, hugs her, tells her, you know, I know you're lost, but I still have you. And, you know, you may not have a mother, but I'll be here to protect you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it saves the girl, which is really, really nice. But now Sadako is super pissed. Coming after Mayu, her brother jumps in last second and sacrifices himself, basically tells Mayu, let me go, let her take me, get out of here, you know, get out of here alive. After some melodrama, she does, ends up going back to the hospital, and, you know, it's not a happy ending considering she ends up in an insane state in bed herself, completely terrified, and then Sadako kills her anyway, and that we get a really good eye shot in this one, by the way. Last shot before the movie is probably the best eye shot they've ever done in this franchise. But kind of, again, skipping through the plot a little bit, but actually this is a very dense movie. It's actually opposite of the last three we've been talking about. Like, there's a lot happening here, and for my money, I do not understand the critical resistance and reaction to this movie almost more than anything else, because this is a good movie. This may actually be like the second or third best Ring movie, period, to me.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Going back to your initial statement that this is a movie that like has no internet presence or anything like that, despite a wide release in Japan, the film is already out of print. I'm not able to get a Blu-ray for it for any kind of a normal price, anything like that. It only has 520 votes on IMDb, and does not even exist on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
You can't even find it. You look up Hideo Nakata, it's not listed under his filmography. This film literally came out and then ceased to exist afterwards. And I don't know if it's because of the negative. It generally didn't get a huge positive return. Let's be honest, I didn't give it the best of reviews. The first time I watched it, when I did review it for over at Blood Brothers, it's a movie I wrote a lot about. And weirdly enough, even though I just saw this movie last year for the first time to do my review, watching it this time, I liked it way better. And I kind of feel bad that I gave it a lukewarm review last year. So I think this, weirdly enough, might be a movie that gets better with time.
Yeah, I think, I mean, watching these four back to back to back to back, I think the return to form was a big factor for me, and I fully acknowledge that. But I actually just think this is a well-paced movie with a pretty decent plot. We're rehashing some territory, but we're completely skipping others. They don't even mention a videotape in this one. Nope. Like, it's there's no video, there's no curse, nothing like that. This is truly, like I said, they make her almost a patron saint for abandoned and abused children instead.
Right.
Still one that makes you commit suicide / die of terror. They're a little unclear on that too.
It's a little blurred, right? And there's actually not a very high body count in this movie, which is really interesting too, compared to the other ones. I think this is interesting because, as you mentioned, it is the return of Hideo Nakata to the fold as a director. He has directed three Ring films before, Ring 2, and then also The Ring 2, the American film, the atrocity that is The Ring 2. So he's directed three of them before, right? And I remember when they announced he was coming back, because he had kind of said that, you know, he doesn't necessarily love to do horror. He's kind of known for horror movies, but he wasn't like so keen on always coming back or whatever. So when they announced he was coming back, I'm like, there has to be a reason why, right? And I think for all of the reasons you kind of state, even in your synopsis, that's the reason why. After three films that increasingly just get batshit insane, this one is very much a return to form, a return to subtlety, a return to a film that doesn't want to explain everything, that very much makes you put the pieces together, right? It's got some really key imagery in it, some throwback moments to the previous franchise, the start of the franchise, you know, with Ring 1, 2, Ring 0, Spiral.
You kind of lose that classic creepy image of the well getting capped.
Yeah.
And they replace it with this shrine has a circular hole in the top I briefly mentioned earlier. And you see the moon crossing into it. And it's really haunting, actually.
And it represents that well, again, because it's an empty cavernous area with water at the bottom of it. It is a well, you know, and it's just a natural well. And I think that that's a really interesting idea. I mean, the cave was something that was brought up before in his films, in Ring 2 specifically, as a place where Sadako was taken as a baby and left to die. And then the mother went and found her and said she had been brought back or whatever by the ocean or whatever it is. So that all plays into it. And again, it's a movie that's subtle enough that they don't really explain any of that. You know, even when they go through that, as a fan of the franchise, I'm able to kind of put that together. But this movie is way more subtle than it's probably one of the more subtle ones since Ring 2.
Yeah, no, you saying that is what just made me realize that you're totally right. This was already a plot point in the Ring movies. It's just the first time we saw it.
It's the first time you really see it. It's the first time that it's really explored as a theme. And I think that's something that Hideo Nakata wanted to explore. There's this idea of children and things like that in this movie. I mean, as you said, the opening sequence is really iconic in imagery. The mother looking through the slats of the the closet she's locked her daughter in, you know, starting the apartment on fire because she's like, you were Sadako reborn and things like, and then Sadako saving the little girl. Right now, it, as you said, it's revealed that it's for a little bit more nefarious reasons, right? But there's this idea because
Sadako's still just pure evil, which is one thing I like that this franchise has never lost sight of at any point. Sadako is pure evil.
Right. Outside of maybe Ring Zero, just because they give her a backstory, but as a missing, which is more akin to the books, right? Like she's more of a miss.
Sorry, well, ring zero doesn't ring any bells.
Yeah, most people, yeah, that's exactly right. And if it hadn't been released in that box set by Arrow here in the US, I guarantee you everybody would be with you on that one. So I do like in the opening sequence, there's a lot of great imagery there with the fire and Sadako in the corner with her really long arms, right, and the hair. But I like that it's a ring light that starts the fire.
Yeah,
it's not the mom, the ring light, it's a ring of light that explodes, right? There's a lot of fun stuff Hideo Nakata does here. As I said, this is a lot of stuff I missed on my first watch. So I'm really happy that you caught it on your first watch, because it took me two watches to get a lot of this shit. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there. There's a lot of kind of shocking, subtle moments that are like classic J-horror. The scene where when she sees the first ghost of the lady who commits suicide on the bridge, that's almost a shock, like how the lady goes over the edge. Like, it doesn't feel like a stunt. It feels like she literally just was like, huh? And then off a bridge.
Well, and in 20 years of Sadako's classic kill being the terrifying someone so much their face takes a rictus-like state, this movie's the first time it has ever been scary to me. Because when it goes, you know, the doctor calls Mayu and goes, you know, your other patient, this subplot with this other patient, you know, died and, you know, brace yourself. And when he's describing it, it cuts to the scene of four orderlies lifting this medical bed up with very little space under it. And there is this lady under it. And she just has this look of terror on her face. And I am just telling you, it is the first time that gag has ever scared me.
Yeah. And it's good. And Hideo Nakata proves that he's a great director, I think, with something like this. And again, it's a little bit baffling this movie gets kind of torn apart as it does. I think it's a movie that'll just gain with time, hopefully. And even the little girl in it is really good. She has a stare that can stop an adult in their tracks. She has a good stare, which is really fun. So I think that that's a huge benefit to this movie, too, is the little girl in it. You know, there's some, the subplot with the brother is one that is probably the weakest thing for me.
I feel like it was some effort to reconnect it to the video part of the myth in a different way.
Yeah, because
when they're going through his video, all of a sudden it pops up a frame of these children's skulls under the water, and that's kind of what leads them one way. And at some point the still frame changes into the moon crossing through the circle in the cave, and it's like, I get why the subplot was there, but it could have definitely been, it's about the one thing in this movie I think is a little bit shaky, because I actually think this is upper tier entry in the franchise, truly.
Yeah.
We mentioned earlier the Nirvana wrinkles. I don't know what the hell that means, but it's a face this character makes that apparently the children find just hysterically funny.
Right. And it, you know, it's shown to be from their childhood, right? When there's a flashback between her and her brother and things like that.
And he's on the top bunk, yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's very convenient that he does a whole YouTube episode explaining a lot of the exposition that we need to know, which makes our lead character exactly like you and me in the natural state where we find out most of our shit from YouTube how-to videos. So, I mean, it's there. So there's a lot of interesting stuff here. It is a lot more subtle, a lot more atmospheric in its ideas. It takes Sadako, it evolves Sadako in a unique way that's very different from the last handful of movies. And what's interesting is when the trailer for this movie first came out, I was super hesitant about it because it was mostly the YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Almost made it look like it was going to be a found footage Sadako movie. And I remember thinking like, oh God, like what have we done? Like what have we done? You know.
Honestly, I don't hate that idea. Found footage.
Yeah.
Found footage ring movie. I hate haunted houses. You hate found footage. I can work with it.
Well, you know what? I don't hate found footage. In fact, there is in. Now that I'm thinking about it, have you seen Norai, Noroi.
I'm aware of it, but Shudder. No, I have not seen it.
I highly suggest, speaking of found footage, it is a J-horror found footage film that is incredible. It is actually, yes, it's directed by the same guy that did SVK, weirdly enough. That movie's incredibly haunting. Woof. But it is a found footage J-horror movie, which is really interesting. So that's a huge side note for that. So, yeah. And then, as you said, this movie ends on a pretty downbeat note. I do like the idea that she's, like, so traumatized by this experience. And then Sadako just doesn't give a shit, which is, like, key to the character, right? So, like, that's always been how this character works. So there's that.
I was today years old when I found out he's the guy that directed Grotesque, which is one of my favorite J-horror movies of the last ever of all time.
Dude, that guy is awesome. And if you see, did a chance to see Carved. Carved is a fucking blast also. So
yeah.
Yep.
I have to start going through this guy's filmography. Carved is
released by Tartan Asian Extreme here in the U.S. because I have the DVD for it. So I'm like, that was my first exposure.
I miss Tartan. Asian Extreme. That was a good sub label. My first copy of Old Boy was Tartan Asian Extreme.
My current Blu-ray copy is Tartan. My first Blu-ray I ever bought. So I think I mentioned that in our Vengeance trilogy episode. So
not sponsored, but certainly up into it.
Yeah, right. Hashtag not sponsored. So I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about Sadako 19, simply because I do think that it's a film that I need to grow on a little bit myself. Even the second watch, I suddenly, and we'll go over our rankings here in a second, but that I kicked up in my rankings three slots after I watched it this last time. So it's definitely a film that I think will end up growing with me, and I really, really wish it would get a Blu-ray release that's not out of print. That would be fantastic. Thank you very much.
Super.
About time that would happen.
Speaking of ranking, we finished a franchise. You know what that means.
Sean, what does that mean? Does that mean we get to go fishing?
Means we rank the whole franchise, and then you get to go fishing.
Dude, that's dank with the rank. I'm doing hand gestures and you're not looking. 10-second dance party.
We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We've got 13 Ring movies that you and I have reviewed. It is time to rank them.
Hold on. 13?
Yep. Sorry. 12 Ring movies you and I have reviewed because we didn't do the TV film.
We did not. Yeah, I was going to say, I only did 12 on my list because I did not put the TV film.
No,
because we only briefly talked about the TV film. So.
Right. Two rights. So I think I am willing to jump in and start. And
Are we going back to front?
Last I'm going to go. First place? I'm going worst to best. Yes.
Okay, worst to best. So
for me, flat out worst is The Ring 2, followed by Ring Zero Birthday, followed by Ring 2, followed by Rings, and then we're getting into the ones I like a little bit more. So I'll go Sadako 3D2, Sadako 3D, Sadako versus Kayako, which I really quite enjoyed. Now we're just into stuff I straight up liked. So Ring, the original Japanese one, we're going to go Sadako 2019, The Ring, the Gore Verbinski one, and my favorite is still Rosin or Spiral.
I still feel like
that is the best of the franchise.
I love it. I love that you're making this bold statement. I'm really curious what our listeners have to say about that.
I'll challenge any one of them.
Especially after this mostly positive episode about the Sadako phase.
Yes, granted, but none of these movies have a dissected corpse popping up and talking to me.
That's guts and ribs are showing. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite. Okay, so my ranking. Number 12, The Ring 2, American film. Terrible, terrible movie. Number 11.
A race to the bottom with a few of these, yeah. Oof,
yes. Yes. There's almost three tiers. I have untouchable tier, the I really like tier, and then trash tier. So, or maybe four tiers if you want. The Ring 2, number 12. Number 11, Rings, the American film. Fun ideas, terrible execution. Number 10, Ring Zero Birthday. Number 9, Sadako 3D. Number 8, Sadako 3D 2. Number 7, Ring 2. Hideo Nakata's first Ring 2. Number 6, Sadako 2019. Number 5, The Ring Virus. Number 4, Spiral, or Rosin. Number 3, Sadako versus Kayako, SVK, as I'm going to call it. Number 2, The Ring, Gore Verbinski's The Ring. And of course, number 1, as I'm sure you guessed it, because it's one of my favorite horror films of all time, Ring by Hideo Nakata. That's my number 1.
I just realized I missed Ring Virus going through mine. For the record, it would rank in between Ring and The Ring. I think the American Ring is actually still the best telling of that story, but Ring Virus is right under it for me. Like, I thought the Ring Virus was an unexpected treat when we went in to watch that one.
Absolutely, right? And definitely, listeners out there, if you get a chance, we do have 2 episodes previous where we go through all of the rest of these films outside of the last 4. The first one is All's Well That Ends Well. That was from last year, the year before last. Oh gosh, was that 2018? No, 2019.
2019.
Early 2019. And then we also have the second one, which is Well, 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 our second part for the Ring franchise, which was the American films. So definitely check those out. Head back into our back catalog and take a gander. But that wraps up our first major long franchise of 12 films for us to tackle. Most of the other stuff has been able to be completed in 1 or 2 episodes. So this was kind of a fun. So,
well, thank God we're not biting into the first chunk of another incredibly long franchise next month, because that would be crazy.
That would be nuts if we did that, right? It's almost like we would just go back to back with this and hurt ourselves. But you know what? I got to give it to you. Next month, we are touching on a franchise that has been requested. It's one that you have pitched for a very long time. So my choice was Ring. So thank you for taking on this hefty task of looking at this entire franchise and going through this with me there, you know, and talking about all of the major themes for this and, you know, all of that fun stuff with us. I hope you listeners out there enjoyed it. If it's something you did enjoy, please, please, please request. We do have the next few months planned out, but we are taking requests for the future. So definitely check that out. And we have a lot for you for the rest of this month, Sean. We have a J-horror themed month, which is why we're ringing in the new year with Sadako, hand in hand, if you will, eye for an eye. But we are ringing in the new year, so we have plenty in store for you coming up for J-horror month. We're back on our normal schedule after December with all of our best of lists and stuff like that, which kind of throws us off. And then, of course, next month we are jumping right into a new theme as is season 2 for No Franchise Fatigue. So,
next month's going to be our second guest star, too.
Yeah, we're going to have some guests coming up. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be torture for me, I'm sure, to some extent. So, but I'm glad you watch all these ghost films, because I know you don't love ghost films. So I'm happy to cater to your tastes for the next large, very large franchise that we're going to be tackling. So excited, excited, excited to tackle that. All right. So we want to hear from you guys. We do. We want to hear. What's your request? You can check us out. Let us know what you like. You can check us out on the social media. Go check us out on Facebook, facebook.com.
Are Matt and I crazy? Are the best Ring films 0, 2, and 2?
Oh my God, I almost had a stroke just thinking about that. you're crazy. But yes, we want to know what you think. We have so much Ring films to cover. There's a lot here. We want to know what your top list is. We want to see what you rank these films, if you've seen them all, or even if you haven't seen them all. Let's see what your favorites are. So we want to see you there. Check us out, facebook.com/nofranchisefatigue. You can check us out on Twitter at the handle NFFpod. Check us out there. And, of course, you can always email Sean. Where can they email you?
That would be at nffpod.sean@gmail.com. My name is, as always, a four-letter word, much like the word ring.
Yeah, much like the word ring. And if you want, you can also get me at Twitter at the Movie Matt. And also definitely check us out. You can email me over at nffpod.kindoffiddly at gmail.com. Kind of fiddly. I mean,
You can also reach us at nffpod.sadakaya@gmail.com.
You can reach us at nffpod.hairsplosions at gmail.com. We love some hair explosions. As two gentlemen who lack a lot of hair on the tops of their heads, we do appreciate some good lush hair.
That's
So
true.
please do not send us hair. That would be great. Thanks. I can see that happening already. I foresee it in the future. I mean, I could use some extensions for my beard to get it as long as yours. So,
Yeah,
yep.
that's the dream.
That's the dream. All right. Thank you guys for listening so much. Check us out next week. We've got a huge Good, Bad, Weird, Wild to tackle. That's all weird and all wild, essentially. So we'll be tackling that next week. And then, of course, please, please stay tuned and always, always remember.
Don't forget to spay and neuter your cat ghost children.
Oh.
thanks, guys.
Good night.